ఓం శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః. హరి ఓం. సదాశివసమారంభాం శంకరాచార్యమ్యమాం అస్మదాచార్య పర్యంతం వందే గురు పరంపరాం సద్గురుచరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమః. పూర్ణమద పూర్ణమిదం పూర్ణాత్ పూర్ణముదచ్యతే పూర్ణస్య పూర్ణమాదాయ పూర్ణమేవావశిష్యతే. ఓం శాంతే శాంతే శాంతిః. శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః. హరి ఓం. So in the last webinar, we discussed Udgita Bhashyam and we entered into the next important discussion in Mantra 7 of Section 3 of Madhukanda. In Ashvabrahmanam, we had introductory Bhashyam. Actually, in the first Brahmanam, the introductory Bhashyam was Sambandha Bhashyam. And the second Brahmanam called Agni Brahmanam, we had Ghata Bhashyam. And in the third Brahmanam, we had Udgita Brahmanam, we had Pramana Bhashyam, Arthavada. And in the fourth, we are having Purusha Vidha Brahmanam. We saw Pravesa Bhashyam already in the following mantra of the seventh mantra of this particular section. Let us read that mantra again. Taddedam Tarhim అవ్యాకృతమాసీత్ తన్నామ రూపాభ్యామేవ వ్యాక్రియత అసౌ నామాయం ఇదం రూప ఇతి తదిదం అప్యేతర్హి నామ రూపాభ్యామేవ వ్యాక్రియతే అసౌ నామాయం ఇదం రూప ఇతి స ఏష ఇహ ప్రవిష్టః. As was told earlier, mantra 7 to 10 are very important Vedantic mantras, and Acharya's Bhashyam on these four mantras, it actually goes on and on without any end almost. So we will do a bit more elaborately these mantras. And we saw up to this portion that we read of the seventh mantra in the last webinar, for which Acharya has given an elaborate commentary called Pravesa Bhashyam, Anupravesha Shruti. Now we will continue with the rest of the portion of the seventh mantra of section 4. Let us read. Anakagrebhyah yata kshuraha kshuradhane avahitasyat vishvambharova vishvambarakulaye tanna pashyanti akrishno hisaha prananeva prano nama bhavati vadanvak pashyan chakshuho shrinvan shrotram మన్వానో మనః తాన్యస్య ఏతాని కర్మనామాన్యేవ సయోత ఏకైకముపాస్తే నస వేద అకృష్ణో హి ఏషః అత ఏకైకేన భవతి ఆత్మేత్యేవోపాసీత. వి విల్ సీ అప్ టు దిస్ పోర్షన్ ఫస్ట్ అండ్ వి విల్ సీ ది రెస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ది మంత్ర సబ్సిక్వెంట్లీ. స ఇహ ప్రవిష్టః. సహా నామక పూర్వం అవ్యాకృత శబ్దిత పరమాత్మా. పరమాత్మా ఇహ స్థూల సూక్ష్మ శరీరే అంతఃకరణే ప్రవిష్టః. సో టు వాట్ ఎక్స్టెంట్ బ్రహ్మన్ హ్యాస్ ఎంటర్డ్ ద బాడీ ఈస్ అవర్ క్వశ్చన్. వీ టాక్డ్ అబౌట్ అనుప్రవేశ శృతి ఎర్లియర్. సో టు వాట్ ఎక్స్టెంట్ దట్ బ్రహ్మన్ హ్యాస్ ఎంటర్డ్ ఇన్ టు ద బాడీ, దట్ ఇస్ అ క్వశ్చన్. అండ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ సెడ్ it pervades entire human body up to the nail, nakaha. Nakaha means nail, all over the body. In the tip of the nail, there is no chaitanyam. It indicates he has entered up to the end of the body. For proving his point, Acharya gives two examples. And the first example is kshuram. Kshuram means razor blade. Its work is kshauram. So kshuraha is the barber. So, you know, Upanishad comes from where to barber example. Kshuradhane refers to the barber's bag. You know, in villages you might have seen a barber will come with a bag and in his bag he will have all the whatever equipments he needs. So barber's bag or container is kshuradhane. So from the highest philosophy, Upanishad comes to barber's quotation also. So just as the razor obtains in razor's bag, similarly, Atma is obtaining in Atma's bag, namely our body. And the second example is Vishvambaraha. Vishvambaraha means fire, Agni. So Acharya calls it Vishwam Vibhati, which sustains the whole creation. So fire is very important principle to sustain creation. So Vishwambaraha, Kulayaha. Kulayaha is the nest for birds. So here Kulayam, it is the fire is the abode, the locus or place. So the place of Agni, according to scriptures, is present in the Arani wood. Actually, in Yagas, you might have heard that they had this Arani wood and they do Arani Mathana. So refer to Kathopanishad, we already seen this. Aranyor Nihito Jata Vedaha. In Kathopanishad, we saw this mantra. So they use the Arani wood alone to churn, to Mathanam, to do Mathanam, to produce the fire during Yagas. Since by churning Arani, fire is produced, that fire is in the Arani in potential unmanifest form. So just as Agni obtains in Arani wood and razor in barber's bag, Paramatma as Sakshi obtains in the body. This is example. And what is the significance of these two examples? When we take razor from its bag, we see it present only part of the bag. In part of the bag only, the razor is present. It is not pervading the entire bag. Whereas when you come to Agni example, Agni is not present in one part of the Arani wood, but pervades entire Arani wood in potential form. And this they call by two names, being present in a particular space. It is specifically called Vishesha Vritti, specific availability in the bag. And in the second example, Arani wood, it is called Samanya Vritti or the general availability. Atma is available in the body in two forms, either as Vishesha Vritti or Samanya Vritti. Although many commentators talk about it, Anandagiri, he makes it very clear that Atma obtains in the body in two forms as Vishesha Vritti and Samanya Vritti. So how is it so? He says, during Jagradavastha and Swapnavastha, we use one particular organ or the other generally and function as drashta, shrota, mantha, vijnata, all that, the seer, hearer, thinker, all that thing we function. When we function in the form, consciousness is specifically available in those organs as it were. As it were should be in quotes, it's important. So in other places, it is not so specific. Similarly, in Swapnavastha also, in Jagradavastha and Supnavastha, we experience the Vishesha Vritti of Atma, the consciousness, the Chaitanyam. That does not mean Chaitanyam is only in the ears as Shrota. So in the other parts of the body also, it is there, but in specific part, it is felt more and has Vishesha Vritti. In Sushupti, Chaitanyam does not express in any specific form, that is hearing, smelling, the consciousness, etc. There is nothing like hearing Chaitanyam, smelling, it doesn't express. But can we say Chaitanyam is not there? If it is not there, what they will do? They will dispose us off. Therefore, during Sushuptav, Samanya Vritti Rupena, as an unspecific general consciousness principle, it is available. That Sakshi, Samanya Vrittaya, Vishesha Vrittaya cha, Upalabhyate iti Dhyotanartham, Drishtantaha Dvayam. So two examples, just only to show that, Vishesha Vritti and Samanya Vritti. So yata Kshuraha, Kshuradhane Avahitaha, obtaining in Shrutadhanam, Vishwambaraha Kulaya Avahitaha. Then the Upanishad says, Tam na Pashyanti. Then from Srishti, the Upanishad comes to the problem of Samsara. From the above discussion, we come to know that Paramatma is available as Sakshi. And that Sakshi, I am. I am the one who is specifically present in the body. I am the one generally present in the body. I am the consciousness principle. And the body is the Kulayam, the Boga Ayatanam, the container. Who am I? I am the Paramatma. So even though I am the Paramatma, the Upanishad says that nobody knows this fact. Consciousness is available generally and specifically also. It is always there. But they, the samsarinaha, all those samsaris, ajnaninaha, they do not recognize this fact. Then one may ask, how do you say that witness is not known? That means I am not known. How can you say I am not known? I very much know that I am. Witness is ever evident because I am the witness. Then the Upanishad says, everybody knows that I am the Sakshi or witness, but they don't know as it should be known. Therefore, there is no question of the total Atma or of Sakshi Ajnanam. It is not totally not that. Everyone has got Atma Jnanam. When anybody says that I am, it is Atma Jnanam only. But only problem is, Jnanam is partial Jnanam. Therefore, it is an erroneous Jnanam. Why this confusion? Bhagavan can bless us to become a Jivan Mukta in the beginning itself. If you are Jivan Muktas, we would not have been born at all. So because we are born itself, we are not Jivan Muktas. So here alone, we should know the reason. Sakshi is available amidst the organs of individual Indriyam, Antakaranam, the Shariram, all that. And because of the proximity, closeness of Sakshi and the abode of the Sakshi, the mind and body, the attributes of one wrongly appear on the other. Therefore, the other organs are given a very, very important technical word in Vedanta, Upadhi. A thing near to another and whose attributes appear on the other. Upa means near. Being near, it gives, falsely transfers its attributes to the other. Its gunas falsely appear on the other vastu. That is called upadhi. And the other one, which falsely receives the attributes, is called upahitam. To understand the upadhi and upahitam, three conditions are required. Number one, both upadhi and upahitam are proximate and intimate. And number two, an attribute of upadhi appears on the other, namely the upahitam. And number three, the attributes are not really transferred. That is most important. It is not really transferred. The general example we give is crystal and a red flower. We have seen this example in earlier discussions also. When you keep these two things, a crystal and a flower together, intimately, the first condition is fulfilled. Both are close by. And the second condition is what? The attributes of one is on the other. Because of the proximity of the flower, the redness of the flower appears on the crystal, which is not really red. And the third condition is the redness of the flower is not really transferred to the crystal, but the crystal appears to be red as though the crystal is red. For example, the redness of one cloth, for example, goes to the other. And that is real transference. Sometimes, you know, the fast colors, they transfer. But it is not so in the case of a crystal. In the case of flower and crystal, the transference is apparent. And after this, the crystal appears to be a red crystal. In the case of a crystal compared to the cloth. So in this example, crystal is upahitam and flower is upadhi. That which lends is upadhi and that which receives is upahitam, falsely. And in this case, organs like mind, body, survey, they all serve as upadhi to Sakshi, to the Sakshi, the witness consciousness, that is the upahitam. So condition number one is satisfied now. Both are intimate because of anupravesha. We already saw anupravesha. And the second condition is attributes of the body or functions of the body are falsely attributed to the Sakshi, the witness consciousness that is free from all attributes and functions. Sakshi does not have any function, but in the presence of Sakshi, eyes become drashta. So drashtrutvam is attributed on Sakshi and Sakshi is falsely called as drashta. Similarly, shrotritvam of ears or the mind, which is a function which involves modification, and none of them belong to Atma. And therefore, Atma is called Shrota, Manta, Vijnata, all that. And coming to the body comes a bigger problem. Mata, Pita, Patni, Putri, all those relations come when attributes are taken. The Nirvishesha Sakshi appears Savisheshaha. Each Vishesha, Vishesha's attribute, it limits the Sakshi, the witness consciousness, and thus Sakshi that is known by all is a limited Sakshi. If you ask, nobody that says that Sakshi is limited, need not say also. But when you say, I am limited, remember that I is nothing but the Sakshi, the witness consciousness. And therefore, the Upanishad says, akrishnohi. Saha, that Paramatma who is Krishnaha, Aparichinnaha, Purnaha. Now is limited and everybody says as Aham Parichinnaha. What type of limitation? Pranan eva pranaha bhavati. When the prana is breathing, nobody says prana is alive, but everybody says I am alive. It is prana's job, but we get attributed. The subject is sakshi, the prana upadhi dwara sakshi, the pranaha bhavati. So also vadan walk, through speaking upadhi, atma appears to be the speaker. But Atma is never the speaker. So also Pashyan Chakshuhu, the eyes, Vak is Vakta, Vadan Vakta Bhavati, Pashyan Chakshuhu, Drashta Bhavati, Shrinvan is Shrotram, Shrotra Bhavati, all that. So Manvano Manaha Bhavati, Sakshi appears as thinker, but mind is the thinker. Each of them limits me, the Sakshi. And what is the fact? Upanishad says, the fact is, Tani Asya Yetani Karma Naman Yeva. All names of Sakshi are not real names and real nature of Sakshi, but they are all names based on the functions of the Upadhi. When the Upadhi is gone, functions go and name also goes. And what remains is that Sakshi, Sakshi Chaitanyam. We don't realize this and we suffer samsara. The reason for this samsara is that the individualized Sakshi, the Sopadika Sakshi, that is a Paramatma, has come down to the level of the miserable Jivatma. Therefore, the Upanishad gets wild and it says, such a person who is after worldly wants, it says stupid. He has not learned the very essence of the Upanishadic teachings. What one should know is not known. This is our problem. Up to this is the Samsara Prakaranam. From Tham Na Pashyanti in the Shloka, in the mantra we read, up to Akrishno hi saha, pranan eva prano nama bhavati, vadan vak, pasyam chakshuhu, shrivan shrotram, manvano manaha, tanyasi, tanyase tani karma namani eva, sayota ekaikam upaste, nasaveda, akrishno hi yesho, yeshota ekaikena bhavati. Up to this is the explanation of the word samsara. How should you smoothly come out to samsara? Come to samskara is nicely describes. So first you talk of Brahman, then from Brahman comes Srishti, Brahman is Sakshi. You say even though Brahman is Purnaha, because of proximity of Upadhis, Brahman is Sakshi superimposed by organs. Thus organs limitations are superimposed on Sakshi Brahman and he is seemingly limited individual. Therefore, Jiva is Apurnaha. He struggles and it is the biography of every individual. What should one do? That is the problem. How to convert the limited Sakshi into limitless Sakshi? This is said in the next line of this mantra that we will read. And in this mantra, we are going to see another Bhashyam called Vidya Sutra Bhashyam. Atmetyopasitam. Atra hete sarvam ek sarva ekam bhavanti. This mantra, Atma iti eva upasita, is an important mantra. It is called Vidya Sutra Mahavakyam. Here Mahavakyam comes and is supposed to be the foundation of the greater Mahavakyams in the Upanishad. So it is called Sutra, the cream Mahavakya. And later in the other Brahmanams, elaborate discussions are there, but they are only the commentary upon this Mahavakya. And what is the meaning of this? How to convert this limited Sakshi to limitless Sakshi? The first answer of the teacher is what? Your question itself is wrong. Why do you ask this question? The question is based on the presumption that you think that the limited Sakshi, the consciousness obtaining in all three states of experience, non-individualized awareness, is called Sakshi. The question itself is based on a wrong premise that limitless Sakshi becomes a limited Sakshi. If the limitless Sakshi has converted itself into limited Sakshi, what you have to do is to reconvert it to limitless Sakshi. So we do sadhana again and again, and then finally reconvert Jivatma into Paramatma for moksha, all that. When there is no conversion, where is the question of reconversion? We say both concepts are wrong. Jivatma has not come out of Paramatma and vice versa. No question of limited Sakshi at all. Sakshi is always non-specified and limitless awareness. It is our confusion. We say that we are limited Jivatma. Nobody says Sakshi is limited. When I say I am limited, I mean Sakshi only, but I feel I am limited. When mind is awake, it looks as though consciousness is extroverted consciousness. And when mind is inward, as in dream, it looks as though consciousness is introvert consciousness. But extrovertedness and introvertedness belong to the mind. When we say active and inactive, it relates to the mind only. Therefore, what we require is removal of confusion, correction is in thought, that only is required. Activity and inactivity, extrovertedness and introvertedness, and finally even the sense of location belongs to the mind only. Awareness is unlocated. You don't become unlocated. You are unlocated awareness, not after jnanam, not after sadhana, and even now I am unlocated awareness. Drop the sense of location through the understanding. How and when do you feel location? Take drishtitvam and give it back to eyes and mind also. Understand that the eyes, mind are drashta, and in sushupti, am I a drashta or not? When mind is not functioning, drishtitvam, seerhood, is not in me. But I, the awareness, is there in susupti also, because of which I say I slept well the next morning. Therefore, what should be done? I should know myself as Chaitanyam, which is in the drashta, in the shrota, in the manta, and still different from shrota, manta, and vijnata. Therefore, the Upanishad says, Atma iti eva upasita. Here, Atma refers to non-specified or unspecified or unqualified awareness. Nirguna chaitanyam, nirvisesha chaitanyam. And where is that chaitanyam available? Acharya gives a nice definition for Atma here. Apnoti iti Atma. That which includes all and pervades all. And at the same different time, different from all of them is Atma. That is, consciousness or Chaitanyam is there in the hearer, in the seer, in the speaker, but itself is not hearer, speaker or thinker. Similarly, consciousness is in seer, but consciousness itself is not seer. It is in thinker, but not in thinker. When you hear, you are consciousness principle. But hearerhood is not the innate nature of consciousness, because when the ears do not hear, you continue to be conscious. Hearer minus hearer good is consciousness. Thinker minus thinkerhood is consciousness. Every hood or every status you have is because of specific function of the corresponding organ. Remove the function of organ, and you are the consciousness principle, and you are Atma, and it is pervading in the hearer, in the performer, in everybody. To understand Atma, the best reference is Kaya Upanishad. We already saw that. Shrotrasya Shrotram Chakshusaha Chakshuho. By the word Atma, another idea is also conveyed, and it is inherent. Hearer, thinker, speaker, etc. are mutually exclusive. When you have one personality, you cannot have the other personality. While speaking, you cannot hear. Any conversation, when I speak, you should hear. When you speak, I should hear. This is the best way for the conversation. Speaker and hearer cannot be simultaneously present. If we violate this norm, there will be a problem. Each personality is an exclusive one. But I, the Sakshi, is not exclusive. When Shrotra comes, the Vakta speaker goes and Sakshi is there. When speaker, thinker come, Sakshi is. All of them go away. Hearer, thinker, everybody is gone. All organs are resolved. You go to even deep sleep. Sakshi is not exclusive. Atma, the Sakshi, is absolute and ever present. From this, we get another important corollary also. If those personalities are mutually exclusive, it is called Vyabhicharat Swarupam. Exclusive personality. None of them can be my Swarupam also. My intrinsic nature. When the speaker comes, hearer disappears. When thinker comes, speaker goes away. all indicates that what speaker and hearerhood is not your inherent nature, writerhood is not your nature. When thinker comes, writer goes away. Therefore, Atmatvadevam, Shrotrutva Bhinnam, Mantrutva Bhinnam, Sarva Bhinna Paramatma Swarupaha, Aham Asmi. So, Atma Iti Eva Upasita. Upasita here means Jnaniyat. So, here it is not Upasana, it talks about Jnanam only. So, Jnaniyat. So, one has to be careful here, it refers to Jnanam only. So, one should know oneself to be the non-specified consciousness, Nirvisesha Chaitanyam. In the Nirvisesha Chaitanyam alone, all roles, the personalities, they are all superimposed. They come and they go. So the Upanishad says, Atrahi Yete Sarve Ekam Bhavanti. Atra means Adhishtana Chaitanye, Sarvagata Chaitanye, Nirvisesha Chaitanye, Atmanisvarupe, Yete, all these personalities, Shrota, Amanta, Adrakta, all of them, they come and go. I am Nirvisesha Sakshi. When organs function, I temporarily put on the dress of hearer, speaker, etc. It is called Ahankara Kanchukam, says Sureshwaracharya in his Naishkarma Siddhi. So when I drop off all these personalities of Shrota, Drashta, Manta and all that, do I become Shunyam? No, but I sleep as Nirvishesha Chaitanyam. Therefore, Brahman should be understood as I, the Atma. Which Brahman? Tadedam tarhi avyakritam asit. I am that Brahman which was present before creation and created all namarupas, the non-specified awareness. The names, forms, functions, they all dissolve. I neither come nor go, for I am the eternal adhishtanam. Ever remains. This is called Vidya Sutram. Vidya refers to Mahavakyam, which is Jivatma Paramatma Aikya Jnanam. The knowledge is one of identity or oneness of Jivatma and Paramatma. To understand Jivatma and Paramatma, they are two words pointing to only one substance, the unspecified consciousness. Since this is an important mantra, and since there is a possibility of some confusion, Shankaracharya takes this for analysis. So this is Vidya Sutra Bhashyam. Pravesha Bhashyam is over. We will now see the summary of Vidya Sutra Bhashyam. Here, Acharya enters into a debate with the Purvapakshis, Purvamimamsakas, who stick to Karmakanda. So again, we will go to the Purvapakshi and Purvamimamsaka and all that. We are Uttaramimamsakas. Jnanakanda, so Mimamsa means Mimamsa is analysis, and Mimamsaka is the people who are interested in Mimamsa. So the Purva Mimamsaka, they stick to ritualistic portions that we already saw. So which is full of vidhi, nisheda, do's and don'ts. When they come to philosophic portion also, they think the same way. They expect to gain moksha through rituals and karmas. It is called a type of vidhi. So whereas Uttara Mimamsaka, they championed by Shankaracharya, he says one can apply those in the case of rituals, but don't bring them for in Jnanakanda. In the Upanishadic portions, no question of vidhi and nisheda. Therefore, no question of doing also in the Upanishadic portion. The whole Vedanta is a matter of knowing something, warning up something. But here Shankaracharya faces a problem because the Upanishad uses the word Upasita. Now it is all going to be so much analysis. The word, one word Upasita is there. Atma iti eva Upasita. So this is a Upasita, is a verb called Vidhiling, and in a statement of commandment. So it's a statement of commandment. Therefore, the Purva Mimamsaha, he jumps and he states, Vedanta contains Vidhi, and therefore there will be action. And therefore, Vedanta is like Karmakanda only, using this one word. And Acharya establishes his point in Vidya Sutra Bhashyam, which we are going to see now. Acharya enters into a great debate with the Purva Mimamsaka, who is a ritualist. He says that the entire Veda is Karma Pradhana only, and Jnanam is only secondary. They don't dismiss Jnanam totally, but they say it is only a stepping stone to perform karma, and karma alone is important, without which liberation is not possible. That is their argument. Since karma is very important, karma prescribing statements, commanding statements, they become very important and they are called vidhi nisheda vakyams. They are but the do's and don'ts vakyams, to put it literally. And according to them, non-commanding statements or factual statements are of lesser importance only. For example, if I say there is a temple in New Jersey, it's a fact. No command is there. Suppose I ask you to visit that temple for a special puja, then that becomes a commandment. Therefore, they contend statements like Tattvamasi, Aham Brahmasmi, they are not at all important. There is no commandment in them, in these Mahavakyams, according to them. You are Brahman. What can we do with that statement? That is the counter question. And Siddha Bodhaka Vakyas are statements that do not require any action. And the Purvamimamsaka says, in Vedas, importance should be given to Siddha Vakyams. We also agree. But they say, apply this law only to Karmakanda portions. Vidhi Nisheda is important only in Karmakanda. In Jnanakanda, no scope for Vidhi Nisheda. It is not a matter of doing, but of knowing the fact, as I said earlier. So actually, Swami says, practical Vedanta is a contradictory statement. Practical Vedanta. Practicing Vedanta is illogical according to scriptures. So practice means doing. Practice Dharma. That is wonderful. But don't say practice Vedanta. Only it's an incidental point because Swamiji says this, I said that. So the Purva Mimamsaka wants to club Vedanta also into Karmakanda portion, saying it also has Vidhi Nisheda. So Acharya waits for an opportunity like this. And now he gets into the statement. Atma iti eva upasita. So according to grammar rules, the verb upasita indicates a commandment. You should. So, in this case, it is said in Upasita, the tha, the last letter tha, is the termination of verb. We call it in Sanskrit verbal termination, which indicates commandment. And therefore, Vedanta also involves doing something. This is their argument. This view is being debated now. How? The Purvamimamsaka peculiarly interprets vidhi. We should remember his peculiar nature. He believes in, how he is peculiar, this is interesting. He believes in Vedas. He believes in rituals. He believes in yagas. He believes in swarga, but he doesn't believe in God. So according to Purva Mimamsakas, Veda is not given out of God. Whereas we accept Vedas as Ishvara's teachings. They say that Vedas are, but they are anadi, are beginningless, they accept. That nobody created Vedas, they accept also. They are anadi, not created by anyone, and are great pramanam also, capable of revealing rituals, swarga, all that. Therefore, what happens when there are commandments? The question is, who gives the commandment in the Vidivakyam? In our place, we say that Ishvara commands through Vedas. But Purva Mimamsaka's philosophy, there is no Ishvara. Veda itself is capable of commanding. Then question is, how can the inert Veda can give commandment? Chetana Vastu can command. A table cannot command. How can Vedas command? Then he says, the verb used has a peculiar property to command. The very verb that is used has a peculiar property to command. Kriyapadam is the verb. It is capable of doing the job, and unique power of the verb, he calls it as bhavana. So Purva Mimamsaka says all this. Since they don't accept Bhagavan, they postulate a new concept called bhavana, the creative or generating power, which is not in our teachings. In our means Vedantic teachings. Where is the generating power? In every verb, at the end of the verb, there is a termination. If you take upasita, there is a tha. That tha is called potential commanding termination. And those commanding terminations have got bhavana, generating power. And since this generating power is in the word, he calls it as shabdi or shabda bhavana. Shabda means the word. So the generating power located in the word, that is in the termination, is called shabda bhavana. And what does it generate? The moment I listen to the word, in my mind an idea comes. What idea comes? The idea, I am asked to do this action. I should do upasita, etc. So it is called Kartavya Buddhi. I have to do. Inclination to do an action is generated by that. And therefore, the word has got the generating power. I hope you are with me in the arguments. So this inclination, the Purva Mimamsaka calls as Arthi Bhavana or Artha Bhavana. So first is Shabda Bhavana is the word. And second one is Artha Bhavana and happens in the mind. So Shabda Bhavana is called so because it is present in the Shabda. And Artha Bhavana is called so because that alone is responsible for attaining Purushartha. So Shabda Bhavana and Artha Bhavana have each three amshas, three aspects. First, for the present, we will leave out the Shabda Bhavana, Amshatrayam, the three aspects. We will look at the Artha Bhavana, the three factors of the Artha Bhavana. It is the inclination to do. And what are the three factors? When I want to do something, three questions have to be answered. What is to be accomplished? Number one, Kim Kartavyam. And second, by what means I should accomplish? Kena Kartavyam. And the third one is, he applies this to Karma Kanda. Suppose there is a Vidhi Vakyam. The third one is, how to attain this? Katam Kartavyam. The methodology or Prakaraha. So the Purva Mimamsaka, he applies this to Karma Kanda. Suppose there is a Vidhi Vakyam. Jyotishtomena Swarga Kamaha Yajeta. It's a statement. What to attain? To attain Swarga. By what means? By performance of Jyotishtoma Yaga. How to obtain? By offering oblations, Indraya Swaha, Varunaya Swaha, all those oblations. There's a methodology. So this is called Kartavyata. So once I develop an inclination to do something, I ask three questions and the answer to these questions is called Amshatrayam. And Purva Mimamsaka says that the entire exercise, if you take a particular chapter for example, it contains the Vidhi Vakyam and rest of the chapter or the whole chapter is answered to the three questions. Then only Vidhi Vakyam is fulfilled. There is one Vidhi in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad also. Atma iti eva upasita is the Vidhi. We just now read. And Tha is there, the termination. So the moment we listen to the termination, which has the Shabda Bhavana, and will generate Artha Bhavana in our mind, that I should do the Upasana to realize Brahman or Atma. This is the commandment from Veda. These are all their argument. So the three questions come to my mind, and as answer to that, the whole Vedanta is prescribed. And then you fulfill the Vidhi. So perfectly there is Vidhi Bhavana. That is their argument. So, sub-commentators, actually they get gala time to make detailed analysis on this subject. Shankaracharya says, this is not how you should look at it. In case of Jyotishtoma, it is possible. There are two things involved. That is first knowing and then doing. Therefore, first I study the chapter and answers the three questions, namely Kim, Kena and Katam. And after gaining this knowledge from Veda, perform the action, the yajna per Vidhi Vakyam. Now, in the case of the Upanishad, what happens? You read the Prakaranam, that particular chapter where Atma is defined. These are called Atmavadi Vakyams. As I read that Vakyam, the same three questions come. Kim, Kena and Katam. I come to know what is Atma and what are the sadhanas and what is the means, all that. After reading and knowing Atma, I want to fulfill the commandment. Knowing Atma through Atmavadi Vakyams, with a view to know the Atma, now that Vidhi becomes irrelevant because already I have known Atma. Therefore, Vidhi Vakyam becomes irrelevant because by reading the chapter itself, I have gained knowledge of Atma. Now, the Purva Mimamsaka argues, after gaining knowledge, there is nothing to do, no action is involved. So, Atma iti eva upasita. So the Upanishads ask a person to know the Atma, and this Atma is described in the later portion of the Vidhi. So you need to read that portion. Therefore, the Purva Mimamsaka says the commandment itself is you should read the later portion of Vedanta and then only you will come to know the Atma. So he states that Vidhi Vakyam commands you to read Atmavadi Vakyam. The statements revealing the nature of Atma. Shankaracharya says no. Why? He says both Vidhi Vakyam and Atmavadi Vakyas, they belong to Vedas. You say to read one Veda Vakyam, namely the Atmavadi Vakyam, you need the commandment from another Veda Vakyam. Shankaracharya argues, then you will say, to read the first Vedavakyam, you require another Vedavakyam. And this will go on. It will be anavastha dosha. So it is ridiculous to argue that one Vedavakyam is required to command to read another Vedavakyam. And therefore, that commandment also cannot be agreed. Then comes the third stage. Now the Purva Mimamsaka, he dilutes. And he says, okay, there is no commandment to know the Atma. Then he says, here Upasita means constant remembrance of Vedas. Smriti Santana Karanam. Santana means continuation. Smriti means remembrance. So you may gain the knowledge from the study of the Upanishads. And what is the commandment? He says, you should read and remember the teachings. This is what Purva Pakshi says. So this remembrance will help in the negation of anatma remembrance, which is the cause of samsara. Because we are always associating with some anatma. So this will help in the negation of anatma. Shankaracharya says no for this also. I won't accept that because of several reasons he gives. Number one, artha praptatvad, first reason. When you know something, the remembrance is there because for anatma remembrance, what sadhana you did? Did you sit in samadhi and meditate to gain the knowledge of anatma? No. Anubhava janyam jnanam smritihi. Smriti remembrance is that. When you get any knowledge, the memory will always be there. Therefore, atma jnanam will also be remembered and nobody needs struggle for that. Artha praptatvat. Then one may ask, both will be remembered then, Atma and Anatma, both will be remembered. Because then, and Anatma remembrance will negate Atma remembrance. Both will be remembered. Then Acharya says, not only Atma Jnanam will be remembered, which is more powerful than Anatma Jnanam and memory, because Anatma Jnanam is what? Is Mithya Jnanam. It is wrong knowledge. Whereas Atma Jnanam is the right knowledge. It is much more powerful than anatma jnanam. Therefore, I won't accept the idea that it should be remembered. It will be remembered. Even as a sadhaka, second reason is, even as a sadhaka, he has learned to see the doshas of anatma. In Bhagavad Gita, we already saw, janma mritya jara vyadi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. Asaktihi anabhishvangaha putradharam grihadishu. Therefore, even as a sadhaka, he tries to turn away from anatma and turn towards atma. Therefore, the mind not dwelling upon anatma is a natural thing. Because of these reasons, anatmani dosha drishtehe atma smritehe artha praptatvacham, you cannot have commandment to remember the teachings. Therefore, the Purva Pakshi, he asks, why can't you take it as yoga abhyasa commandment? One to practice yogic meditation because of the word upasita. Therefore, he says, after knowing Atma, you should do meditation. So, the book knowledge, it is indirect knowledge and insufficient, and one has to practice chitta vritti nirodaha. That is what yoga abhyasa says. Thus, there is a commandment. Upasita is a commandment. And Purva Pakshi's argument is, upasita, that is chitta vritti nirodham kuryat. Take it like that. Learn to still the mind. Chitta vritti nirodaha. Because in Yoga Sutram, it is said, yogaha chitta vritti nirodaha. Yoga is nothing but the removal of all thoughts. Vritti means thought, chitta vritti, all thoughts from the mind. So whereas in Vedanta, are we removing thoughts or are we getting thoughts? Here, teacher produces thoughts in the mind of the seeker. Whereas the Purva Pakshi says, that is not enough. After learning Vedanta, one should meditate and remove all thoughts. Elaborately, they separate vritti into 5 categories and try to negate through each one of them. When all the vrittis are emptied, then the Purva Mimamsaka quotes the Yoga Sutram, namely, Sarva Vritti Nirode Sati Tada Drashtuhu Swarupe Avasthanam. Then only you will be established in your true nature Swarupam. Drashtuhu Swarupe, Sachidananda Swarupe, Asanga Atma Swarupe, Mukta Swarupe Avasthanam. So this remaining in the self without any vritti, any thought alone is moksha according to them. Then he says in another sutra, vritti sarupyam itaratra. When you are not in samadhi, And when you are coming out into the world, the vritti takes place and you become one with vritti, vritti sarupyam bhavati. This is not a moksha. Therefore, in jagradavastha and sopnavastha, you are one with vrittis. Even in Vedanta class, you are one with vrittis many times. That will not help though. After gaining knowledge, when you empty the thoughts, tada drashtuhu swarupe avasthanam. So after study, you have to do yoga abhyasa. Chitta vritti nirodaha. To gain moksha, Purva Mimamsaka says this. So this explanation of the Purva Mimamsaka for Upasita, this is what is given. So practice chitta vritti nirodaha. Now Shankaracharya answers, the whole Yoga Shastra is already refuted in Brahma Sutra. Yetena yogaha pratyuktaha, as a wrong philosophy. And thereafterwards, it has been said in Brahma Sutra that in Yoga Shastra, whatever is not contradictory to Vedic teaching, we do accept it. And chitta vritti nirodha, emptying thoughts for moksha, is contradictory to Vedantic teaching. Vedanta does not ask you to remove your thoughts. It asks you to do Vedanta vichara. Therefore, it is by the analysis of the teaching you get moksha, not by removal of thoughts. So Acharya quotes Upanishads, Acharyavan, Purusho Veda, etc., all that. So nowhere it is said like this. Therefore, he establishes yoga is apramanam. It is not a pramanam, it is invalid. But yoga for refining or tuning the personality is acceptable. This is not against Vedantic teachings. We don't negate yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana. We don't negate any of them. So we accept it. Moksha is not gained by emptying thoughts. It is contradictory to Vedantic teachings. Moksha is gained by Vedanta vichara only. So yoga for refining and tuning the personality is accepted. This is not against Vedantic teaching. It is for attunement of the body and the mind. Moksha is not for emptying thought, not by emptying the thoughts, but it is gained by Vedanta vichara. And the next argument the Purvapakshi counters is, if there are no vidivakyams at all, that is, vidivakyam means what? The statement of commandments. There will be no karma in the Vedanta. Then Vedanta will give no phalam and will not have any purushartha. And therefore, the statements will become Arthavada Vakyams, giving no benefits at all. We already discussed all this Arthavada and all earlier, the earlier webinars. So they will become Nishprayojanam, without any benefit. The entire exercise will be of no use. Then Shankaracharya says, Jnanena api purushartaha bhavati. By sheer knowledge, we get benefits. Example, he goes, the Rajju Sarpa example. Mistaking a rope for a snake. Here I face a problem because of a mistake born out of my ignorance. Here I suffer because of mistake born out of ignorance. Suffer, mistake, ignorance, all are keywords. When there is suffering born of mistake through ignorance, then knowledge alone can remove ignorance, and the ignorance born mistake, and the mistake born suffering. Rope ignorance is because of snake mistake, and the suffering is on account of bhayam, kampanadikam, terror, fear, and all that. Now, Rajju Jnanena, through the knowledge of the rope, Rajju Ajnanam Gachati, the ignorance of Rajju is, the snake is gone. Tadvara Sarpa Bhrantihi Gachati, the mistaken thing, the delusion of snake is gone. Tadvara Bhayakampanam Gachati. Through that, bhayam also goes. Therefore, what we emphasize is, Jnanam without action can give us prayojanam. In the same way, Vedanta removes sufferings caused by the self-mistake born out of self-ignorance. The replacement of self-ignorance by self-knowledge will remove the sufferings and save us from the toils of samsara. In Vedanta, jnanam itself gives purushartha. Therefore, Vedanta requires no karma. It requires no commandment. Therefore, Atma iti eva upasita is not a commandment. We are talking about that one particular sentence in this particular mantra. Acharya makes an exception. Jnana can give purushartha, that may not be an universal rule. In certain cases, jnanam alone is not sufficient and you require karma also, action. In Karmakanda, most of the jnanam does not give prayojanam. Lot of jnanam is there in Karmakanda, but no prayojanam from that jnanam. Knowledge in some cases requires karma, and in most of the cases no action may be required. And knowledge by itself frees us from samsara, like the lamp instantly removes darkness, atmajnanam. All the 84 asanas, knowing itself will not help me. Here jnanam is not sufficient. Here karma is required. I should practice those asanas. So vidhi, commandment, is required. In Vedanta or Jnanakanda, jnanam itself gives the phalam. And therefore they are not arthavada vakyams. Even without vidhi, Vedanta can be by itself and it can give phalam. Then comes the last argument. Now the Purvamimamsaka says, you establish your views by giving various reasonings. Okay. But if you see the statement, Atma iti eva upasita, the Purvapakshi says, it is not one favor, but there are three favorable portions to support us in this statement. Upasita, ta itself, that is should, it is commandment. We already saw. So Shabdi Bhavana, which produces Arti Bhavana in mind, which has three amsas, kim, kena, katam. We already saw that. And upas is the root in upasita, the root. So dhatu, to meditate upon an action. So upa plus as, dhatu, upaste, upasate, upasate. So, and thirdly, there is an expression iti, atma iti. Iti is generally used in the context of upasana only, meditative action. Thus, the convention is, for example, Veda says, manaha brahma iti upasetha. So, think of the mind as Brahman. It's a Veda Vakyam. The iti indicates you visualize mind as Brahman. So what does it mean? Mind is not Brahman, but visualize it as Brahman. So adityaha brahma iti upasita, manaha brahma iti upasita, salagramaha vishnu iti upasita. In these cases, through, even though they are not, you visualize them as they are. Iti means that. You visualize stone as God. You have prescribed an action of visualization. So visualize as Brahman. It is not knowledge, it is action. Visualization is an action, a commandment. It means three actions. So ta termination, ta is a termination of action. Upas is verb, iti the expression, all the three. That means atma is not Brahman. You have to visualize as Brahman, which is not knowledge, but action. I hope you are with me. Atma is not Brahman. You have to visualize it as Brahman, which is not knowledge, which is action. Visualization is an action. So the Purvapakshi has three favorable points to say it is commandment. Now each point posed by the Purvapakshi has to be refuted. We have to clarify all of them. So now let us take the verb upas. Upasita, upas. Acharya says, upas here should not be taken as visualization, but as knowledge only. Because it's all contextual. Because the preceding and the following portions, they talk about knowledge, jnanam. So the context is jnanam, knowledge. Anupravesha Shruti was said earlier. Later, Aham Brahmasmi Mahavakyam follows. It's going to come. So thus, if you study the former and later portions, we see that it is not Upasana Prakaranam, but it is Jnana Prakaranam alone. For example, if I talk about tire example. Yeah, we are all driving, right? Tires. Now we are not driving. Cars are all kept in garage. So the inflated tire means filling or inflating with air. The same inflation in this context is inflating the tire, filling with air. But in the context of economics, inflation is something else. Similarly, if you take the word frozen, in different contexts, it has different meaning. So also upas generally means upasana, but here it must mean knowledge according to context. That's what Shankaracharya says. Then what about the ta termination, upasita, that termination, which has got shabdi bhavana, which produces arthi bhavana, etc. Then two answers are there. Shankaracharya gives one, and another commentator says in his commentary, we'll see that first, of, you know, Brahma Sutra, there is the person is called Sarvajnatma Muni. He is a Shishya of Sureshwaracharya. He says, to Purvapakshi, you say that Tha grammatically means should, a commandment. Very particular about grammar rule yourself. So what about your karmakanda? Shankaracharya knows all about karmakanda. And also weaknesses of Purva Mimamsaka also. In fact, Sureshwaracharya, he was himself was a Purva Mimamsaka before. So Purva Mimamsakas, they violate grammar contextually also. Where there is no commandment, for example, Agneyaha Ashtakapalaha Bhavati. There is a statement. No commandment at all, grammatically. And the Purva Pakshi argues, even though it is not a commandment, since the context is action, we have to take it as commandment. That's what he says. So Sarvajnatma Muni says, if you can violate grammar according to context, why you think I should not do it? So he goes in the offensive way. So here it is Jnanam context where commandment is not possible, and therefore that tha, the verbal ending, should be taken as statement of or proposition only and not as commandment. Now coming to Shankaracharya, he does not give that answer. He just emphasizes the impossibility of commandment in knowledge. There is a general rule also, when two debates have got similar defects, one should not question the other. This is the rule. Yascho bhayo samo doshaham pariharasya tatsamaham naika pariyanayoktavyaham tatrugartham vicharane. So violation of grammar rule, Purva Mimamsaka does according to context. We also do likewise, and you should not question me. So says Sarvajnatma Muni also. And Shankaracharya says, in knowledge, commandment is not possible. He also adds one more point. The Purva Mimamsaka says, Bhavana creates an idea in mind that I should accomplish something. Then the three questions come. What are the three questions? Kim, Kena, Katam. This is curious questions. In a commandment, a curiosity is created. Akanksha. Curiosity is akanksha. So, kim bhavayet, kena bhavayet, katam bhavayet, iti akanksha. This is the curiosity. This is the sign of commandment. So, Shankaracharya argues, when Vedanta tells me that I am everything, thereafterwards, what curiosity will come to my mind? There is no akanksha at all. Because Vedanta says, I am everything. So, sarva akanksha nivrittihi bhavati. I am fully satisfied and I have reached the ultimate. I am everything. What is there for me to accomplish anymore? So, krita krityaha, krishna karma krithi, ahamanna mahamanna mahamannam, ahamannataha ahamannataha ahamannataha, ahagya shloka krithi, brahmarpana brahmahabihi, brahmaivatena gantavyam, brahmakarma samadhinaha. When I have nothing to accomplish, there is no question at all as to accomplish something. So, what, how, by what means to accomplish? All those things. So, sarva akanksha nivrittehe. There is no question of commandment. Thus, upas and tha are justified. Now, only what is left is only the iti, iti padam. For iti also, Acharya has same argument. The context, the preceding and later portion show, I am Brahman. It is not for visualizing, but a statement of fact. So, Acharya says, word iti only signifies one knows Atma without objectification. The purpose of iti is to know objectification. When I say realize Brahman, you think it is an object. When I ask you to realize Brahman, you think it is an object. Whereas iti, you realize Brahman is myself. To know something means it is an object. Here, without objectifying, you own up Brahman. This owning up without objectification is indicated by iti. So he says, avishayatvam bodhanartham iti shabdaha. Thus, iti, upas, and tha are justified. And what is the final meaning now, if you have to take? One knows Brahman as Atma without objectification. That is actually this thing. One knows Brahman as Atma without objectification. Or one wants a Brahman as oneself without objectification. This is the translation. So this is the meaning of Atma. Atma iti eva upasita. This is Mahavakya and this is called Vidya Sutram. This is supposed to be the Upakrama Vakyam of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Why we went through so much of details is for this reason. It is the Upakrama Vakyam of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. What is the beginning and end of Bhagavad Gita if you take? Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra is the beginning. And Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna is the end of Bhagavad Gita. But the question is, in second chapter, 11th shloka, Ashochyanan Vashochatvam, that only is the Upakrama shloka. The Gita teaching begins there, Upakrama shloka. And Upasamhara shloka is the 66th shloka of the 18th chapter, not the Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna. It is Sarvadharman Parityajya. That is the Upakrama shloka. So the rule is what? Upakrama must give the whole teaching in the sutra form, in a nutshell. Thus, Ashochyan, that is the Gita Sutram, that teaching in nutshell. Actually, Shankaracharya, he doesn't even bother to write any elaborate commentary up to that point. Second chapter, 11th shloka onwards only, he gives elaborate commentary. And Upasamhara also must give the entire teaching in sutra form. Sarvadharman Parityajya, it's also a sutram. So both of them contain the entire teachings in a nutshell. So the question is, what is the Upakrama and Upasamhara shloka of Bhagavad Brihadaranyaka Upanishad? This is also a big Upanishad. Ushava Ashwasya is the beginning. We already saw the beginning slow mantra. Ushava Ashwasya, Ashwasya. And the last mantra is Vamsaha. That is the end of the Upanishad. Then the question is, what is the Upakrama and Upasamhara of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad teaching? For that we say, Atma iti eva upasita. This particular mantra is the Upakrama, which is the Vidya Sutram summarizing the essence of the entire Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And the later portions are only expansion of the first teaching. And the Upasamhara comes in the fourth chapter. As I told in the beginning, there are six chapters. The fourth chapter is the Upasamhara Shloka. The conclusion comes in the fourth chapter end. Neti, neti, atma. So that is the Upasamhara mantra. So in these two mantras, the entire teaching is given. And so it is called Vidya Sutram. With this, Vidya Sutra Bhashyam is also over. Now we will conclude the remaining portion of this mantra, mantra 7. We are still in mantra 7, remember. From section 4, mantra 7. Atmetyeva upasita atra hyete sarvayekam bhavanti tadedat padaniyam asya sarvasya yadayam atma anenahi etat sarvam veda yatahavai padena anuvinde devam kirtim shlokam vindate yayevam veda. Atma iti eva upasita. One knows Brahman as Atma, means Chaitanya. Why it is called Atma? Because atrahi yete sarvam ekam bhavati. In this Chaitanyam alone, all of them, who are all of them? Shrota, mantra, vijnata, seer, hearer, all those people. Ekam bhavanti, they all dissolve into oneness. That means all the visesha jnana, particular knowledge, like Ghata Jnanam and all them, they all rise from what? The non-particular Chaitanyam, awareness. They rest in awareness and resolve into awareness alone. All Savishesha Jnanam, particular knowledge, objective knowledge, rise from objectless knowledge and resolve into objectless awareness. That means always we have awareness is at the substratum. When thoughts rise in the mind, awareness gets specified at a particular knowledge. When part thought comes, part knowledge comes. As even thought arises, particularized awareness comes. And when thoughts resolve, unparticularized awareness remains. When part is born in space, there is part space. When it is resolved, part space is not there, but there is space. Thus, Shrota, Manta, Vijnata, etc. rise from Atma and resolve into Atma. So it is called Atma, Apnoti, Sarvam, Iti, Atma. Atma, Iti, Param. And then the glory of knowledge is mentioned here. Asya, Sarvasya, Etat, Padaniyam. Among all creation, after Asya, Sarvasya, we have to put a word there, madhye. So it is called the Nirdharane Shakti Padam. Let's not go into grammar. So, Etat Padaniyam. This Atma alone is to be known. It is worth knowing. Why? Anenahi Etat Sarvam Veda. Through this knowledge alone, one knows everything. We should remember actually Mundaka Upanishad. Etasmin Vijnate Sarva Vijnatam. In nutshell, Anena Atma Jnanena Sarvam Veda. Self-knowledge makes you omniscient. An example is given here. It is like Padena Anuvindet Eva. As you can trace a cow from its hoof marks. If Atma is known, one can know everything also. He is giving the cow example. So as the hoof marks, following the hoof marks, one may be able to see where the cow is. So if Atma is known, one can know everything. And also, Kirtim Shlokam Vindate. Yayevam Veda. Kirtihi means fame. Shlokam means association, relationship with the desired object, people and all that. So fulfillment of all desires. One gains through this knowledge. Also, Shankaracharya gives a specific meaning also for Kirtihi. Kirtihi says is Aikya Jnana. How? Acharya is the pramanam for this. One becomes Aikya Jnani, Sarva Vastu Ekatva Jnani by knowing Atma. He knows oneness of everything. Here, Aikyam is not union, but Ekatvam. We should be careful. It is Ekatvam, one. Jivatma Paramatma Aikyam, Jivatma Jivatma Aikyam, Jivatma Jagat Aikyam, Jivatma Paramatma Jivatma Paramatma Jagatam. In his vision, they are all only one. So this is one palam of Atma Vijnanam, Kirti. And Shankara talks about this shloka. Shloka here as moksha, shloka. Association with moksha or liberation. Therefore, Kirtim shlokancha vindate. He gets Atma Vijnanam and moksha. Who gets? Yaha evam veda. One who knows. In what way? Evam, in this manner. And what is the manner? Paramatma alone is Jivatma. Not by knowing Paramatma is total, samatti, angi, Jivatma is vesti, individual, anga. Not by that. Jivatma Paramatmanoho Atyanta Abhedam or Paramam Samyam. As said in Mundaka Upanishad, Yaha Evam Vedam Saha Eva Etam Palam Ashnute. With this Parashruti, the seventh and the most important mantra, one of the most important mantras is over. Now we will go to the eighth mantra, which is also a very important mantra, which we will read fast.
Tadetat preya putrat, preyo vittat, preyon yasmat sarvasmat, antarataram yadayam atma, sayonyam atmanaha, priyam bruvanam bruyat, priyam rotsyatim, ishvarohatataivasyat, atmanameva priyamupasitam, Saya Atmana Mevam Priyamupaste Nahasya Priyam Pramayukam Bhavati.
This is another important mantra, often quoted by Acharya. And the essence of the mantra we'll see. So this Atma, this Jivatma, which is identical with Paramatma, so Paramatma Abhinna Jivatma. Is Priyatamaha, dearest superlative. So it's so Brihadaranyaka says Atma is dearer than everything else in creation, whether it is Putra, Vittam, Graham, Patni, or for that matter anything. After giving a few examples, the Upanishad generalizes and says Anyasmat Sarvasmat. So before going to the meaning, we will analyze the concept, because that is important. It is an important mantra. We should analyze this concept. In Vedanta, we say there are only two things which are loved by people. These are universal and unshakable laws. Number one is Sukha, Ananda or happiness. And number two is Sukha Sadhana, through which one gets Sukha. That is Sukham is the Sukham and Sukha Sadhana. Number one is Sukham, that is the Sadhyam. And number two is Sukha Sadhanam. This is the universal law. These are the only two things which are liked by everybody. Now, law number two is the love for Sukham or Sadhyam is Sukham that is sukham is primary and it is most important because it is unconditional. I love sukham because it is sukham, period. Whereas love for sukha sadhanam is secondary because it is conditional. The moment it ceases to be sukha sadhanam, I will not love it. Secondly, once I have attained the sadhyam through the sadhanam, I love to buy a beautiful car, whatever car it is, and once I get the car, and then that car turns out to be a lemon, I want to get rid of it. And that is number one. And secondly, once I have attained the sadhyam through the sadhanam, there afterwards, the sadhanam is no more loved. That sadhanam is rejected. Therefore, love for sukha sadhanam is only to attain sadhyam, and once the sadhyam is attained, sadhanam becomes irrelevant. That is law number two. So, in fact, love for sukha sadhanam is not real love at all. It is a fake love because it is the love for sukham which falsely appears in the sukha sadhanam. When a person is rich, I love. When he is not rich, I don't love. Therefore, it is a transferred love, a seeming love and fake love. This nyaya is called sadhya iccha sadhane sankramati. So, therefore, we have only one real love and another fake love. Lot of people say, oh, when I was rich, I used to give so much of that donation, this donation and all that. And now, you know, these people don't even look at me. They don't even, when I go there, they don't even recognize me. All these things come. So, sukha iccha is real and sukha sadhana iccha is unreal. This is the maxim number two. And maxim number three, from scriptures we come to know, atma alone is sukham and anatma is not sukham. For this maxim, what are the corollaries we get? Now, we have to connect the second and the third maxims. Second maxim is what? Sukham alone is truly loved and sukha sadhanam is not truly loved. Now, we apply the third maxim, atma is sukham and therefore atma alone is primarily, really, unconditionally loved by all. And if there is love for anatma, whether it is relationships, objects, wealth, whatever it is, everything else, if at all loved, they are loved only as sukha sadhanam. Then it will be secondary love only, or conditional love, or fake love only, not real love. Nothing else in the creation is truly loved. I love anything because it gives me ananda for my own sake. This is technically called Atma Seshatvam. I love anything else conditionally because it happens to be Sukha Sadhanam. The moment it stops to be Sukha Sadhanam, I'll drop it. Any problem in any family is because of person X who was Sukha Sadhanam once. He's no more that. Open rejection of things and persons is called a separation. Or inner rejection of those is called a hatred. Separation and hatred. Open rejection of things, persons cause separation. Inner rejection within your mind. Oh, this guy has come, what to do? All because of they are no more sukha sadhanam. Vedanta says it is not the mistake of their change in character. It is your own mistake that you expected unconditional love from other people. Vedanta says no one can give that. From this we get a corollary also. We have said one loves oneself only first. Nobody really loves another thing or person. We extend this to religion and even to God. Even love for God cannot be as true and as primary and as unconditional as the love for oneself. We have heard a lot of people saying, oh, I don't believe in any God. After some mishap happens in the family, they immediately say, I don't love any God. There is no God at all. I don't believe in all those things. People say all that. Even devotees become irreligious. Then some tragedies strike. When their prayers to God, they seem rejected. Love for self even is more than even for God. I even reject the relationship. Only my prestige is not maintained. Self-love is a fact and cannot love anything else, including God. These are all in practical life we see. Now we get into a fundamental question. In the Vedanta itself, it is said that a jnani loves everyone unconditionally as himself. So Lord himself said in Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, Atma upamyena sarvatra samam pashyati yorjuna sukham va yediva dukham sayogi paramo mataha. This law that one cannot love other people unconditionally seems to be violated in case of a jnani. Now we have to reconcile these two contradictions. What the law says? That we love ourselves only truly. We cannot love others. The second statement is, jnani is an exception and loves truly and unconditionally all. So these are the two contradicting statements. The question is, this law not applicable to jnani. Vedanta says jnani also is selfish only. In fact, it takes one more step. Even Bhagavan has to obey this law. So jnani is also selfish, it says. Even Lord also has to obey this law. Now, does that mean Bhagavan does not love his devotee more than himself? Jnani does not love his fellow beings, Advaishta, Sarvabhutana, Maitra Karuna Evacha, Sarvabhuta Hiterataha, all those was told in Bhagavad Gita. Vedanta says that you can reconcile these two laws only in one way. Jnani is also selfish and loves himself only. Still, his love is universal because of one thing, he has discovered himself to be all. So jnani is also selfish and loves himself only. But his love is universal because he discovered himself to be all. He has discovered everything to be non-different from himself. If you apply this law, I love myself only. I am able to love you because you are not different from me. The universe is not different from me. I love myself only. And if I love God, primarily it is because God is not different from me. In other words, jnani is selfish. And we should put the letter selfish, the S, capital S. In that capital S, Jivatma, Paramatma, Jagat, ants, elephants, everything is included. That is the speciality of the jnani. So he is also selfish only. Since I am all, since I love myself, and therefore I love all, this state of the jnani is Sarvatma Bhava. He has identified himself with all, and his self-love is nothing but the universal love for one and all. Whereas all other people who say Bhagavan as different, they cannot love Bhagavan primarily at all. Nobody can love Bhagavan primarily if they see Bhagavan as different from them. So that is why the Advaitins, they always say, the people who see this Beda, they cannot have true bhakti for Bhagavan. Can love Bhagavan primarily, since the universal law is one loves oneself only primarily. And whoever sees God as different, for him God becomes anatma. An object, and God will become sukha sadhanam, and therefore love for Bhagavan will be secondary only, unconditional. Extending the same law, Bhagavan also really loves himself only. He also loves the world. How can both can be correct? It is as in the case of a jnani only. You apply the same rule to Bhagavan also. Bhagavan is jnani and Bhagavan also is selfish. And if he says that I love myself, that myself includes the world and all creations, including the devotees and the world. Lakshmi Devi also is in that category for Narayana. For this, there is a pramanam also which we get in the 7th chapter of the Gita also. He defines 4 types of devotees. Then he says, Priyohi jnaninaham atyartham aham tu atmaiva me matam. Jnani happens to be myself and I love myself and therefore I love jnani. In fact, I love an ajnani also because he is non-different from me. Because universe is non-different from me. Jnani has discovered this truth. Jnani is selfish, and in that selfishness, everything in the universe is included. Since I am all, I love myself, and therefore I love all. And why there is problem for Ajnani and for Jnani there is no problem? Ajnani is selfish with small s. Selfish, the word selfish, small s. And therefore, his love is limited to small Atma. And therefore, Raga Dvesha, fake love and pretension, all those things are there. Now, if you look at the mantra, Tad etat preyaha, tad etat atma tattvam. So, what was said in the last mantra, Sharire anupravishtam brahma tattvam. Why say atma tattvam and not atma? There is also a small detail. It's only a grammatical thing. Etad is napumsakalingam and atma is pullingam. So, atma tattvam. This atma tattvam is preyaha. Is comparative degree here, actually. Priyaha, preyaha, preshtaha. Actually, we have mentioned this earlier also in some other context. So, this Atma is dearer than Putrat, son. For everybody, son is dear, children are dear. So, this Atma is even dearer than the child and Putra. And the Upanishad attacks the primary misconception and says, Atma is dearer than Putra. This is extended to other things. Preyaha, Vittaha. So, all this Atma is different than all the wealth. And Preyaha, Anyasmat, Sarvasmat. So, it doesn't want to keep on listing. Atma is dearer than this, that and all that thing. So, it makes one common statement. Anyasmatam, Sarvasmat. Atma is dearer than everything else. If Atma is dearest, then what do you say about people who sacrifice? Because we say a lot of people do sacrifices in life. People sacrifice life for their children. A person sacrifices life for his country. That means, I love my children, I love my country. That is, the love is not unconditional for all children, for all the nations. I sacrifice only when the children or the country are associated with me. I love my children. I love my country. This tendency, we call it as Atma Sambandhat. Evam etat sambhavati. My love is only for my country because I am associated with my country. Therefore, Atma Seshatvad evam deshaha snekaha natu sarva desha snekaha. Putra snekaha natu sarva putra snekaha. So therefore, the law holds good and there are no exceptions at all. Why is the Atma dearest? Because antarataram. Because Atma is the closest and innermost to anyone. Here also another law is envisaged. Whenever, whatever is closer to me is dearer to me. Whatever is farther to me is less and less dear to me. Out of sight, out of mind. It is a universal law. Atma and Atma alone you love most as per Vedanta. Closer a thing, it is loved more. Atma is closest and therefore is loved the most. Later I understand, the world is not away from me and then the love for world also comes. Therefore, Atma is innermost essence and it's loved the most. Atma is the innermost antara thara, a comparative degree, thara. It is to show the pranamaya is interior to annamaya, but same pranamaya becomes exterior to manomaya. Manomaya is antaram with respect to pranamaya, but exterior with respect to vijnanamaya. Vijnanamaya is exterior to Anandamaya and Anandamaya is the interior most. Therefore, the other koshas are interior, all right, but they are not interior most. The innermost is Atma, Atma Sarvantaraha. So, Anantara Tara means, that's what it means. So, Atma is not relatively interior, but it is absolutely interior. That means myself. It is absolutely close and the closest one is myself, two is called antara taram in this sloka. Now, the Upanishad wants to give some advice also to all the people. And what is that? Since all other loves other than self-love is conditional, fake love, and not dependable because it will desert you at some time. So, ananda born out of loving other things and objects is perishable ananda. Therefore, you will be deserted and you will have to face problems later. Why? They will all perish being naswaram. This alone Krishna says in the 5th chapter, Yehi samsparshaja bhogaham dukkayonaya evate. So instead of Shruti advising directly, it puts through somebody, a jnani. Shruti says that wise man's advice is correct. Right upadesha it says. What is upadesha of the wise man jnani? The Upanishad says, Yaham anyam atmanaham priyam Bruvanam Bruyat. Imagine a conversation between Jnani and Jnani here. The Jnani can be called Atma Priyavadi, Atma Eva Priyaha, Iti Vadina. So Vaditum Shilam, Asya Iti Atma Priyavadi. So true love is the love of Atma alone. One who argues thus, he is called Atma Priyavadi, Jnani. And who is an Ajnani? The Ajnani is Atma, Anatma Priyavadi, so Ajnani. So he says, I don't want to love the Atma and I want to put everyone else greater than myself, love for myself. I want to do selfless service. I want to love people. I want family, everything. So such a person is an Ajnani from Vedantic point of view, Anatma Priyavadi. Now imagine their conversation. Anatma Priyavadi says, Atmanaha Anyam Priyam Bruvanam. Everything other than Atma is to be loved truly. And the Jnani says, Yaha Priyam Rotsyati Iti Saha Bruyat. One day that Priyavastu will perish. Priyavastu for the Ajnani is Anatma. Therefore, for you, the Anatma Priyavadi, the Priyavastu, which is Anatma, will perish one day. Rotsyati, Acharya comments, so it's a Vinangshyati, it will die, it will perish. I will go away from you and you will be terribly dejected. That's what I'll say. So all kinds of problems you will face. Thus, Atma Priyavadi wants the Anatma Priyavadi. Now, Shruti says, Ishwaraha Hata Taivasyad Saha Ishwaraha Bhavati. Ishwaraha, master of the above statement. Ishwara is not God here. The master of the above statement. Therefore, now Jnani says that you are going to be in trouble if you love God more than yourself, then God is Anatma. How he gets the courage to fight all others. Because tatha eva syat, what he says is a fact. Anatma nashvaraha evam eva syat. Anatma will definitely perish. It means his dearest one will perish also. And naturally he will have to face dukkham one day. Because that sorrow. So his advice is right. Jnani's advice. And what you should do? Turn your love away from Anatma, whether it is sacred Anatma, like Shariram of any deity, or secular Anatma, Shariram of a person. Whatever doesn't matter. Whether higher Anatma or lower Anatma, one should not love Anatma. Depend, hold, cling, or embrace that Anatma in whatever form it is, you will be in trouble. Then what should I hold on to? Atmanam eva priyam upasita. Upasita means janiyat, jnanam. So one should love Atma alone as priyam, dearest object. One may ask whether Upanishad is teaching selfishness. People might ask that question. Yes. Then will it not mean that you should not like other things? When Upanishad says you should love Atma, it means for a jnani, there is no other thing. Therefore, his selfishness includes all. It is going to come in the next mantra, tasmat tat sarvam bhavate. Thus, Jnani is selfish, but his self includes his wife also, neighbors also, even enemies also. Then will that mean he loves all anatmas? No. He does not love enemy as anatma, but he loves the enemy as atma. Sarvabhutastham atmanam. Sarvabhutani atmani. So, ikshate yoga yuktatmam sarvatram samadarshanah. So, therefore, the difference is when Ajnani loves family members, he loves them as something different from him. Whereas Jnani's love does not include family alone, but his love includes the whole world. Vasudeva Kutumbakam. Ultimately, it boils down to what? Either love all or you don't love anything else. When you love some people and don't love others, then alone problems arise. Be selfish and let that self include the whole universe. Jnani's love includes Atma and Anatma. That is what is said here. Atmanam eva priyam upasita. Then what will happen? Jnani will never suffer any sorrow. In Jnani's case, Atma never goes away and he never has any sorrow. That is said here, saha yaham atmanam eva priyam upaste. One who knows Atma to be the dearest. Then what is the advantage? Asya priyam pramayukam nabhavati. Pramayukam means perishable. His dear Atma will never perish. That is no problem of separation or loss or sorrow.
தத்ர கோ மோகா கசோகா ஏகத்வம் அனுபஷ்யதா யஸ்மின் சர்வாணி பூதானி ஆத்மைவா பூத் விஜாதா. திஸ் இஸ் த பலஸ்ருதி. ஸோ நஹாஸ்ய பிரியம் பிரமாயுகம் பவதி. சங்கராச்சாரியா இன் ஹிஸ் கமெண்ட்ரி ஆட்ஸ் ஒன் மோர் கிளாஸ் ஹியர். சப்போஸ் அ பர்சன் இஸ் அ மந்த அதிகாரி ஃபார் ஞானம் கேன் டூ திஸ் உபாசனா. பிரிய ஆத்மா உபாசனா ஹி கேன் டூ ஆல்சோ. ஸோ சங்கராச்சாரியா சேஸ் ஃபார் த லோவர் அதிகாரி இன் விச் கேஸ் உபாசித ஷுட் பி டேக்கன் அஸ் உபாசனா ஒன்லி, தென் த பலம் இஸ் பிரியம் பிரமாயுகம் ந பவதி. தி பலம் ஃபார் சச் உபாசனா இஸ் ஹிஸ் நியர் அண்ட் டியர் ஒன்ஸ் வில் நாட் டை தட் ஈஸிலி. தே வில் ஹாவ் எ லாங்கர் லைஃப் தீர்க ஆயுத்வம் நாட் எட்டர்னிட்டி, வெரஸ் பலம் ஃபார் ஞானம் இஸ் ஸ்டேட்டட் டு பி எட்டர்னிட்டி. வில் ஸ்டாப் ஹியர். யோ வேதாதௌ ஸ்வர பிரோக்தோ வேதாந்தே ச பிரதிஷ்டிதஹம் தஸ்ய பிரகிருதி லீனஸ்தே யப்பரஸ்ய மகேஸ்வரஹா ஸ்ரீகிருஷ்ணார்ப்பணமஸ்து.